Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, escalating tensions between the U.S. and China have accelerated the unraveling of a globalization more quickly than many predicted even a year ago. But with a political shift set to take place in the U.S. from the beginning of next year, what does this mean for that relationship? And how will this impact the tech sector? And are we set on course for global slobalization? Well, today we're joined by Velu Sinha, and he's the partner for telecommunications, media and technology practices at Bain & Company to find out. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel, for having me.
Our absolute pleasure. So first I have to ask you, you know, we've talked a lot on the show about the tensions between the US and China, but with a political shift in the US, could we see things start to ease?
You know, Rachel, given the current tenor of discussions and things that are happening, we think that's unlikely. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of things that the new administration has on its plate, and we think that the issues that have come up between the rest of the world, quite frankly, in China, are issues that will certainly evolve over time, but are likely to stay in place over especially the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, what does this mean for the U.S.? Because as you aptly put it in the report, this is a prize that really can't be ignored. I mean, if you look at China's domestic market, you know, China's consumption alone represents up to 25% of a global demand. So what does this mean for the U.S.?
Well, there are a couple of different things that are happening. The importance of China as a supplier, of course, is paramount in mm-hmm. terms of many of the things that are in place. The opportunity to serve the China domestic market is also, of course, very important to global players. And you know, we certainly see that in many sectors, the automotive sector, other sectors where China continues to be the focus of investment and really an anchor point of the growth that many multinationals are seeing in this area. We also see China doing an incredible job of continuing to build out its own domestic industries and finding places to pursue markets abroad. So really, as we see this evolving, it's not a question of folks ignoring the opportunities in China or not recognizing the importance of China, but really recognizing that from a geopolitical perspective, it's going to take time for things to move and evolve. And to a certain extent, the positioning right now is one that gives room to the political folks on all sides of the equation to evolve things in a fashion that isn't pushed by election dates or other, you know, hard deadlines. Given the things that are on the horizon, we think that what will happen is that businesses will need to continue to plan for resilience. And in doing so, they'll need to think about the various optionality that they need to have to continue to pursue these priorities. And that'll include, of course, both serving out the opportunity to make sure that their global supply chains don't suffer, as well as figuring out what the right types of partnerships and allegiances and commitments they're willing to make in order to make sure that they still have access to the markets that they seek. And both of those things will need to continue in parallel.
You talk about China's technology sector rising as globalization era comes to an end. You talk about expanding tariffs, cybersecurity concerns, and U.S. interventions reversing years of mostly open global trade. And you call this the new era of slobalization. Can you tell me more about that term and the context here?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? As we've looked at the rise and you know, potential pause of some of the nationalist interests, if we look at the issue that's kind of driven growth these last several decades around globalization, we think what's happening now is that there's getting to be a more measured response between the political interests and, quite frankly, the business interests. Folks are pausing to get a sense of a tenor, quite frankly, on all sides mm-hmm. of the equation. And this tenor is a function of the amount of investment that's required, the amount of risk that's required, or the amount of risk that needs to be endured in making some of these things play out. And it's a chance, I think, really for companies to recognize that before we continue to go full speed ahead in the old form, which was kind of everything's possible and we are more limited in our concerns, it's a chance to say, hey, what do we need to go off and really sustain in a manageable fashion the types of infrastructure which we require to serve the markets over longer periods of time. So not just about in quarter or in year sales, but really about saying, how do we position these things so that as we think about multi-year threats to intellectual property issues, multi-year threats to opening up markets and opening up competition, how do we make sure that all sides and all players in these markets have a chance to go off and have things work out in their interest? In the past, many of these things were led almost primarily by the commercial interests alone. Now what's happening is it's the commercial interests and the political interests that are being balanced out. And it's causing an opportunity for dialogue, quite frankly, amongst the politicians, the business folks, the bankers, the people that think about how the trade policy is made in having these things play out. And it's happening across sectors. So, you know, we talk about it in tech, but obviously the balance sheet that needs to be looked at amongst these countries goes far beyond tech in terms of the trade issues that need to be resolved. And they'll all come together and they'll all be part of the calculus that gets played out. It's just a question of kind of which wave and which form. And as we have pointed out in our analysis, it is a wake-up call that says you can't necessarily rely on business as usual, and you probably need to, from a globalization perspective, think about what you need to do to make sure that you have backup plans. You can't put all your eggs in one basket. And that's the part of globalization that we think is most critical to highlight.
And you know, it's such an interesting topic, because when you're talking about trade and globalization, moving away from globalization to potential decoupling, I mean, look at the ramifications for supply chains and products. So how do you really see this playing out, and how is this going to impact consumers and organizations?
Well, there's a couple of different levels. I mean, in some sense, if you're in the capital equipment business, it's good for you, because what it means is that in the past, where you've gone off and had one set of scale manufacturing that perhaps could go off and service a good portion of the world's needs, we're going to go off and see these manufacturing activities happening in a more diverse set of regions, certainly across ASEAN as we think more broadly, but also from the perspective of nearshore opportunities. So things that are happening in North America itself, things that are happening in Europe and Africa, things that are happening in India, both to go off and serve the local and domestic markets in these regions, but also to go off and just provide some diversity so that we're not in a position where there's a choke point on some of these tariffs. Mm-hmm. So again, from a capital equipment perspective, it means instead of having seven lines in one place in one country, we're going to wind up having 15 lines across multiple geographies to go off and serve these markets. Those lines, you know, you could argue from an efficiency perspective might be quote unquote subscale, but these are all large markets and large opportunities. And there is an opportunity to go off and, you know, sell more capital equipment to go off and support these lines. So there's some silver linings for certain players in being able to do this. Now, what does it mean with regards to prices? What does it mean with regards to the opportunities? Is it the most quote-unquote efficient way to go off and do things? That's going to be a more complicated situation to look at. But again, the bottom line is that none of these markets that we're thinking about and the way that you kind of think about serving these markets are tiny, right? These are all areas where if you kind of think about the region writ large, there's a huge set of opportunities to be served. So we don't see an immediate impact on consumer prices, you know, moving drastically or anything like that around these areas. We think that there are certainly going to be some implications there. Someone's going to have to go off and help to carry the costs that'll go up. But at the same time, those same things will be offset by, again, some of the surety and assurance that comes from having more stable supply chains and having backup plans so that you don't have, as we were saying earlier, all your eggs in one basket.
That's wonderful. Well, Velu, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
We've been speaking with Velu Sinha, partner telecommunications, media and technology practices at Bain & Company, right here on Primetime on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.